Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to our program today. And we always look forward to our monthly chat with Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. And he will be our guest today. And he's always got some really, just really encouraging things to say about our state. I think that he's one of the more positive people that you'll ever run into. And looking forward to asking him about this amazing, mind-boggling, shocking headline that was in the News and Observer, Dan Forrest, right. Oh my goodness, those three words rarely get put together, but apparently he made some comments about the economic impact, or lack thereof, of House Bill 2 as compared to, you know, those that want to say it's destroying our state. And PolitiFact looked at his comments, and there's your headline, Dan Forrest, right. We'll be looking forward to talking to him about that and other things as well here on What Matters in North Carolina. In case you missed our last week of programming, we've had several folks from the North Carolina General Assembly on the program, and you can go back anytime a couple of ways. You can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and find all of our podcasts there, and you can also go to the iTunes and Google Play stores and listen at your leisure. In fact, you can actually subscribe to the program and have it dropped into your computer or your smartphone daily, and you won't miss a minute. For example, last Thursday, we talked with Representative Bill Brawley about opportunity scholarships. House Majority Leader John Bell was with us on Wednesday. And then we started Tuesday with our run through the North Carolina House. We're talking with Representative Greg Murphy, who, as you know, is also a physician, and talking about the epidemic of people having, dying, to put it bluntly, from overdosing as a result of getting addicted to prescription pain medicine and having to turn to things like heroin when they can't get their medicine anymore. So really good last couple of weeks. We had House Speaker Tim Moore on a week before that. And so if you've missed any of our shows, please feel free to go back and listen to What Matters in North Carolina, and I'm sure you will enjoy our programming. So, without any further ado, let's talk with our Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina our Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, you were in the Lone Star State a few days ago. How was that trip?
It was great. It was an enlightening trip. It was interesting. I was invited down by the legislature in Texas to talk to them about the process that we went through in North Carolina related to the bathroom policy and what we had to do to combat what happened in Charlotte. So it was eye-opening for me that what they knew about it was really what the media talking points have been for the past year, but not the truth. So I had the opportunity to testify, I had the opportunity to meet with senators and just enlighten them on the truth about the whole process.
So I'm sure that you were able to give them a lot of relevant information. Does it look like Texas is going to go forward with that kind of legislation similar to House Bill 2?
Well, I don't know. You know, the Speaker of the House is pretty adamantly against it right now. Some of the legislative leaders in the House were clear to say that the caucus has not taken it up as an issue, and they will. So there's really no telling. But, you know, the real argument down there in Texas was how this was going to hurt business, how it was going to be bad for business in Texas, how it destroyed business in North Carolina, how all these companies were leaving and that sort of thing. And so I was able to enlighten them on the truth about this, that this really equated to about 0.1% of our annual GDP in North Carolina, that to date no company has left North Carolina, and our economy is doing quite well.
Well, that sort of dovetails into what I was going to ask you about next. There was a big headline that says PolitiFact NC, Dan Forrest, right, about HB2's economic impact. And apparently there is some vindication there because, lo and behold, and I almost fell out of my chair, but The words Danforth Wright.
I think hell must have frozen over, Mark, because I think that's the first time the PolitiFact has ever said I was correct about saying anything.
Well, you know, the words Danforth Wright don't usually come from the News and Observer very often, but I was pleased to see that. And so, I mean, let's talk about that, Lieutenant Governor. The fact of the matter is the media wants to make so much hay, or tries to, whenever anybody, you know, has anything negative to say about our state as related to House Bill 2. But you told the folks in Texas, and I think it bears repeating what you just said, that the most extreme impact equates to 0.1% of our annual GDP. That really is quite remarkable.
It is. And I also reminded them that, you know, the backlash against our bill is not really because of the bill. It's because of the lies and misinformation from the media about the bill. The bill is very common sense to keep men out of women's locker rooms and showers. And it's a very common sense bill that helps protect privacy and safety and security of women and children across our state. And every time I have a conversation with any business leader, they agree with me. So I ask them, why do you come out against it then? And so it really has nothing to do with the bill. It's about the misinformation. So, yeah, 0.1% of our annual GDP, that's not shutting the state down by any means. We have, as you know, Mark, a $550 million surplus in our state. We've created hundreds of thousands of jobs over the last few years, 76,000 jobs alone since that bill was passed last year.
Wow.
We're ranked at the top of all of the list for Forbes, for Site Selection Magazine, for CEO Magazine as best places to work, best places to raise a family, best places to start a business, all these kinds of things. So it's hard to argue with the success of North Carolina right now, as we're creating some 6,000 jobs or so a month on average in our state. People keep moving here at a near record number. So I think we're doing pretty well, and we just need to continue to speak the truth.
Well, what's really disconcerting to me is how the vitriol from the left is just so rampant when it comes to this. And you really can't find people who will admit that, you know, come right out and say, well, yes, I'm in favor of having men in my daughter's shower, but they seem to want to ignore that. But really, as you said, it's just common sense, and yet somehow that narrative gets played down by the media. So it really is something that, as you said, business people don't want that, and I don't think the people of North Carolina want men roaming around in girls' showers, but somehow the message seems to get lost.
Well, you know, the media has a narrative they want to portray. The left has a media narrative they want to portray as if they're protecting somebody out there, as if the transgender community, that is a small fraction of a percentage of our country, is, it looks like it's a major majority. And, you know, again, what we did, to reiterate what our bill did, was to say that we will provide reasonable accommodation for people that are transgender or have any other issue going to a multi-stall public facility. We'll provide them reasonable accommodation in a single-stall lockable facility. We do that all over the country. We've been doing that all over the country. In fact, it happens all over the world. But what the business community, the NCAA, the ACC, are clamoring about is, why does the government of North Carolina not open up their bathrooms and showers and locker rooms to everybody? Because certainly they don't have an issue, because our bill said they can privately, they can do whatever they want with their bathrooms. So we're letting them do whatever they want. And interestingly enough, Mark, no, there are no takers there. None of these businesses, the NCAA, the ACC, they haven't done themselves what they are trying to hold North Carolina to as a state government. So it's a complete hypocrisy in every way. And I believe, Mark, that this is the biggest war on women that we have ever seen in America, at least since the women's liberation movement, the women's rights movement. I mean, this is really an attack on women's safety and women's privacy and women's rights. And I think that's the part that really needs to be hammered out there.
Well, yes. And Lieutenant Governor, I'm sure we probably have even touched on this in the past, but really this, in my opinion, I've written about this and we've talked about it, it doesn't have anything to do really with transgender individuals and their rights. There's a much broader agenda here that is under the surface, and that is to try to change society's acceptance of gender and gender identity, and to allow that to become mainstream. And, you know, what bothers me is that even lawmakers, they address these bills without even, you know, pausing to question, well, wait a minute, you know, is this transgender stuff legitimate? Because I've had people on my show recently, scientists, in fact, who say, you know what, this stuff really isn't, you know, all that it seems. And if parents would let their kids, you know, grow up and not encourage this kind of behavior, most of them grow out of it. And so, you know, there's still question about the legitimacy of a lot of this.
Yeah, there have been scientific organizations that have come out and actually called it child abuse parent to take a young child and push them through this gender identity process. And, you know, yeah, we've seen it from the federal government. We saw the federal government get engaged and say that the term sex in our civil rights legislation actually means gender and means transgender and means all of gender fluid and all these kinds of things. And that's absolute absurdity.
Yeah.
But I would imagine, Mark, you're still going to see this work its way through the courts and work its way back to the Supreme Court and then probably to Congress. This is going to go on for a while. It's a battle of our day. It's a battle over basic truth. Is a man, a woman, do chromosomes matter and does biology matter? And, you know, for those folks that are struggling with their gender, their identity, their orientation, for those folks, you provide reasonable accommodation. You don't ask the entire public, the entire country, to change the way that they have been doing things since the beginning of time and to change what they have believed since the beginning of time to fit their agenda.
Well, it certainly is crazy sometimes if you really stop to think about it. And I was wondering today, as I was driving into work, I was thinking, I wonder what's next. You know, let's suppose that the Human Rights Commission and all these people got their way and all of these non-discrimination ordinances were allowed to stand and people could go to the bathroom wherever they wanted, regardless of, you know, their gender and all of this. I wonder what's next, because, you know, there's something next on the list. And it's just kind of bothers me to think about what behavior would come along next that they would clamor for and say that there's civil rights attached to. I don't think we've seen the end. I don't think transgender is the end game, is my point.
No, I don't think so either, Mark, but I don't think that our imaginations could even begin to imagine what would be next.
Well, I don't think I want to anyway. Interestingly enough, and I don't know that you know enough to comment about this, but tangentially, Representative Mark Brody over the weekend said he's going to file a bill to investigate the NCAA and the ACC over their opposition to House Bill 2 because of their tax-exempt status. And so somebody in the North Carolina General Assembly is not letting them, you know, just continue to bulldoze us. Representative Brody looks like he's going to try to take this head on, so it will be interesting to see where that goes. So,
yeah, good for him. You know, with all the clamoring of the media, Mark, for transparency and for open records and all the things that they, you know, say politicians need to comply with all their requests for every text and every email and everything else. No clamoring at all from the media for the votes of the members of the NCAA or the ACC when they're attacking North Carolina and really having a political campaign against our state.
Yeah. So changing the subject a little bit, I know that you're intimately involved and concerned with improving education in North Carolina. And Governor Cooper rolled out his proposed budget a couple of weeks ago and trying to make some changes and actually eventually, I think, scale down and maybe even do away with opportunity scholarships, expanding Medicaid, which I don't think he has the right to do legally, and then spending increase of 5.1%. Your thoughts on that? I know that opportunity scholarships is something that is very popular in our state right now.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, from my perspective, Mark, we've talked about it many times, school choice in general of giving parents the opportunity to choose the best option for their students. And if you're taking a student that's in a poor community somewhere that doesn't have options except for the failing school in their community, then an opportunity scholarship is there and available for the poorest of the poor students in our state. So I think I would, you know, I've said it before, shame on any politician who would not allow a parent to have an opportunity for a good education for their child, regardless of what kind of education that is. I mean, we shouldn't just be in the business of public education. We should be in the business of education and trying to make that education excellent. I think we're making some improvements in public education. That's a good thing. There's some great traditional public schools out there. There's some great charter public schools out there. You're seeing some movement where parents are actually getting to make choices for themselves and for their kids that benefit their future, and that's a good thing. But to come in and to try to dismantle a program that is helping the poorest students in our state, I think that's moving in the wrong direction. So you know me, I'm in favor of all choices. I would like to see education savings accounts be a part of what we do in North Carolina, again, to help parents make the best choices for their students' education. And, you know, hopefully we'll make some progress on that. But as it relates to the other budget stuff, you know, increasing a budget by 5%, I don't think that's responsible. I think the Republican legislature and former governor did a great job of keeping our spending in check, moving from what was a deficit when we took over to a surplus now, which allows us to build things like the rainy day fund. When you have hurricanes that do hit North Carolina and floods that hit North Carolina, you have money there to help the people out. And now we're getting to a place where, yeah, we can start doing some other things with those surpluses in our state, but we need to do it in a reasonable, conservative fashion.
Now, I guess some big news last week, we had two press conferences, and we saw Senator Tillman and Senator Brown, Senator Heist, talk about let's use some lottery money to help with rural school repair and construction. And then Senator Barefoot and Representative Horn talking about bringing back the Teaching Fellow program with a focus on STEM studies. Are these good ideas?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think that certainly there's a major disparity out there between our rural and urban areas related to the quality of schools and, you know, the facilities that students use, and being able to modernize those facilities to meet the needs of, modern day students. So, yeah, I think that that's probably pretty good. I think that, you know, we always need to be cautious to be in the business of, when we're talking about data and that sort of thing, of measuring our outcomes and not our inputs. So it's not just the facility. The facilities do make a big difference today. It's not just about, the money that goes into these programs. It's about the outcomes that come out of them. That's why the Teaching Fellows Program was scrutinized to begin with, because the outcomes weren't what was needed in our state. So Now revisiting that and saying, you know, we're having struggles perhaps recruiting teachers, as everybody is all across America. That's not a North Carolina thing. How do you go about attracting the best and the brightest teachers? How do you go about attracting the best and the brightest principals for your schools? And that does have an input measurement to it of how much you pay them and that sort of thing. But we should be looking for quality over quantity.
And I guess tonight is the state of the state. It'll be Governor Cooper's first opportunity to do that. Of course, as the person who oversees the Senate, you will, I assume you'll be there. What are you looking forward to or expecting from that?
I am actually on my way to Washington, D.C. right now, Mark, so I won't be there.
Well, like I said, you'll probably miss that tonight.
The governor and told the governor that I wasn't slighting him. I had already planned meetings in D.C. to meet with members of the cabinet, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was up kind of doing North Carolina's business. And we're kind of talking to those secretaries and folks at the White House about what our plans are in North Carolina, and hopefully for the first time in 8 years, getting some cooperation in those efforts.
Well, I'm sure that that will be time well spent, and you always do represent North Carolina well. If you were going to be there, do you think that there's going to be an openness to the crowd there, the General Assembly? Things going to go well, you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's a cordial place. People are certainly friends behind the scenes, you know, like, you know, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to say back in the day, you know, they were perhaps bitter enemies during the day and criticizing each other all day long, but they used to have a line that said, we're friends after 6 p.m. And so they'd get together and hang out and that sort of thing. This will be after 6 p.m., so I think you're going to see some civility in that chamber. Certainly, we're not going to agree on all things. There will be some things that we do, though. I think that Governor Cooper is actually coming alongside the General Assembly related to what we've done with teacher compensation over the last 4 years. And he's kind of picking that up now right where we've, you know, we haven't left off because we haven't stopped doing it, but he's joining the team, I would say. So I think there'll be some stability there. I think that you know, the issue is what you spend your money on. And if he's going to be focused on, you know, just increasing the numbers of Medicaid recipients right now, that's certainly going to be a challenge, because obviously you're having the healthcare debate in Washington, D.C. That one's going on. It's a big debate, and it's going to continue to get legs over the next few weeks. But we've seen what's happened with Medicaid expansions in places like Ohio, where it now consumes about one half of the state's general fund budget. It's pretty wow. unbelievable, and we have to make sure we don't get into that same mess.
Well, I'm sure that folks like yourself and the good folks leading the General Assembly will make sure that we stay on track, because the course that has been charted for the last 5 or 6 years certainly has been much better than previously. So, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, thank you as always. As I said, I'm sure you'll represent the state well as you head to D.C. Safe travels to you, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Great. Thank you, sir. Well, I really enjoy talking to the Lieutenant Governor. He's an excellent guest, and one thing I've noticed about him is that he does not parse his words. He's very forthcoming, very forthright, and if you ask him a question, well, he answers it. He doesn't do it politically. Just, you know, what you see is what you get, and I appreciate that about our Lieutenant Governor. And I think he represented the state well in Texas, and I'm sure that he'll do so in Washington, D.C. as well. I guess what I appreciate most about him is that he's genuine, and he's got integrity, and he, you know, he stands up for what he believes. A lot of politicians, they tell you one thing because they know you want to hear it, and then when they get around their friends or get behind closed doors, they are something else entirely. Well, that is certainly not the case with Dan Forrest. I'd like to thank you for listening. And in case you missed yesterday's show, we were talking about the hot topic of the month, I guess, raising the age for juvenile prosecution. You can find that also at freedomactionnetwork.com or in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. We have lots of great guests lined up for you coming up this week, so stay tuned. Make sure you don't miss a minute. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow on What Matters in North Carolina.